Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, COP29 continues in Azerbaijan this week, where a discussion on how to finance global climate breakdown, those discussions are ongoing. There is broad agreement on the amount of money needed, but the way in which it will be funded is proving to be a major sticking point. Well, as the end of the conference looms, tensions are rising and there are fears that negotiations will come to a standstill. And for analysis on what's happening at COP29, I'll be speaking to Dr. John Sweeney, Emeritus Professor at Maynooth University. But first, I'm joined on the line by Lauren Boland, who's a reporter with the journal.ie focusing on climate. Lauren, good morning to you and thank you for joining us this morning.
Hi Claire, good morning.
Now, what are the latest developments in Baku? Because we know at the beginning there was a lot of despondency around what this COP meeting could achieve. Has there been any major agreement on finance?
So, yeah, finance is the big ticket item at this COP. And basically what it is that countries have to agree on a new target for how developed countries are going to help developing countries deal with climate change. Now, that figure analysis is looking at that figure being around $1 trillion per year. That's the amount, that's sort of the minimum amount needed to actually help developing countries deal with climate change, to be able to take action to protect themselves against it and to reduce their own emissions, which is good for themselves and good for the rest of the world. Now, it's what exactly that finance is made up of and who exactly is contributing and who benefits. That's the real kind of sticking points in the negotiations, and those still haven't been resolved. So conference started last Monday on the 11th. It's meant to end on Friday. Obviously, today is Wednesday, so we're getting into the final stages now, and there's still no agreement, no kind of resolution on those issues. The way the negotiations work is that everybody, you know, gets in the room, the negotiators, they'll bang out a text that kind of has loads of different options where everybody is saying, this is what I want, this is what I want. So what you have right now at the moment is this really sprawling text. It's dozens of pages. There's hundreds of pieces of text that are kind of stuck in brackets. There's dozens of different kind of options and sub-options saying we could go this way on it, we could go that way. And what actually has to happen now is that they need to start whittling that down, because if there's going to be an agreement, it obviously needs to be on one consolidated text.
Okay,
so that's going to be the work that's going to happen in the coming days if a deal is going to be done.
The clock is ticking in more ways than one. Just on the Irish front, I know Eamon Ryan is there and he gave a statement yesterday on behalf of this country. So what did he have to say?
Yes, so Eamon Ryan was there and he delivered Ireland's national statement. He kind of emphasised, first of all, to the world the way that climate change is impacting Ireland. So he talked about how, you know, we're not immune to climate change, that as a small island country, we're very much, you know, seeing the impact already in terms of things like increased rainfall and flooding and how that affects our towns, our villages, our farms, things like how marine heat waves in the seas around our coast, you know, kind of have impacts on things like biodiversity in our waters. And also the way that, you know, looking to the future, we're expecting to become, you know, warmer, wetter, generally a more unstable climate into the future, and how that affects, you know, our lives, our livelihoods and our nature around the country. And he also talked about that need to deliver on climate finance and what Ireland has been doing. And so in 2021, Ireland actually, we currently have a target that was set in 2021, which is that we provide €225 billion a year in climate finance. Now, he said yesterday, Eamon Ryan, that we're on track to meet that target by 2025, which was a new development, because we didn't already have the latest figures we have up until now, I think, were from 2022 of how much climate finance we've been providing. So that was, I suppose, welcome news to hear that we're on track to reach that target. Although actually that €225 million target was already quite a bit lower than what some kind of expert analysis would suggest will be Ireland's fair share of international climate finance. That idea of fair share comes up a lot in climate talks when you're thinking about who has the capacity, who has the responsibility to sort of take action, really. And so, what the fair share analysis would suggest is that actually that target should have been $500 million. And now, of course, looking at setting a new global target, that would increase again for Ireland.
Okay, so there are those who would be lobbying for Ireland to increase the share of funding that we're putting into the pot. Well, they're asking us to double it and more.
Yes, and that's even going back a few years. So now what's happening, that fair share of what Ireland's contributing, that would have been based off a global target set in 2009, which was for collectively $100 billion a year to be put towards climate finance. But when we're talking about the target that's going to be set at this COP, you're actually looking at a target that's going to be in the region of $1 trillion a year, which sounds like a huge amount of money. And of course it is. And our fair share then of that pot naturally is going to be bigger than what it would have been of a target of $100 billion. And what a lot of developing countries and kind of activists are saying is that the way to make up that money, a key part of it, should be taking money away from fossil fuel subsidies and putting that instead into climate finance, because we collectively, the Western world, send a lot of money into subsidising the fossil fuel sector. Okay. So they'd like to see that redirected elsewhere.
Lauren, thank you so much. Lauren Boland there, who is a reporter with thejournal.ie. Let's go to Baku now and to Dr. John Sweeney, Emeritus Professor at Maynooth University. So John, do you get the sense in the closing days of COP29 that the negotiators are getting down to business now? Do you think they're any closer to reaching a climate finance deal?
Well, I'm not too surprised the way things have gone so far, because it's quite common for the first week of COP to be posturing largely by the politicians. And then the negotiators get down to work in the second week. And by the Wednesday or the middle of the week, the red lines have been established on all sides. And normally what happens then is the chairman butts in and tries to bang heads together, gets people to negotiate through the night. And eventually all those square brackets, which you referred to in your previous interview, they eventually get removed. Now, I do sense this time round that there is a reluctance on the chair and indeed on the host country to actually exert their authority on the recalcitrants, if you like, among the countries concerned.
Why do you think that is?
It's partly... Well, I think this is a country which effectively floats on oil and gas. 90% of Azerbaijan's exports are oil and gas. If you go through this lovely city with its magnificent architecture, the Paris of the East, you can buy a litre of diesel for 50 cents. You can burn a kilowatt hour of electricity for 5 cents. So there is, if you like, a dependence, a continuing dependence on oil and gas, which the countries around this area are reluctant to remove completely. Uh-huh. And so I just hope that they have the backbone, if you like, put into them to actually achieve the end product come Friday or indeed Saturday, as the case may be. Mm. I think what we're seeing as well is a reluctance on the part of the developed world to bridge that gap between the $1 trillion, which the developing world is adamant it requires, and the pre-existing commitment of about $200 billion. And I have to say the EU itself is driving its heels by all accounts here as well. So there is, I suppose, a landing zone somewhere between those two. But whether it will be sufficient to satisfy the ambitions of the developing countries, I'm not sure. One of the problems that I think we face here is the legacy issues from way back in 1992, when countries were divided up into blocks. And the group of 77 developing countries and China have changed a great deal since that time. China is not really a developing country. The oil exporting states are not developing countries. They have a very different agenda from the small island states, for example. And all of that makes for great difficulties in negotiating. Who are you negotiating with? We have the Taliban here, for example, representing Afghanistan. There's going to be huge issues, as you can imagine, around gender. So it's not an easy situation, complicated by the external geopolitical environment as well.
Well, I just wanted to mention that with you, because if Azerbaijan is reluctant to push those countries that are holding back, they might be bolstered in that position by that geopolitical context in the world around them, would you say?
I think so. And I think, you know, one can see, for example, the fact that the United States delegation are probably all going home to get the sack. There's a lack of leadership there. All of that...
There's John's line gone. But we did well all the way from Azerbaijan to have John so clearly and for so long. That's Dr. John Sweeney, who joined us from Baku at COP29. We will take a break. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about this drug, which I'm sure you've heard about. It's the synthetic drug fentanyl. But we're going to get an eyewitness account of the impact that it has had in some communities in the United States.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.